For NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Jasmine Garst.
And I'm Felix Contreras. You're listening to the TNT Boys doing Música del Alma. It's a boogaloo joint from the late 1960s with a lot of soul. And today we've got a special guest who also has a lot of soul. Dominican-American author Juno Diaz is one of the most exciting fiction writers of our time. The characters and themes of his work are universal, but they are also very personal, no matter where you're from. Some of his characters will seem kind of familiar.
He's best known for the book The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao, a novel which earned him a Pulitzer Prize, and he just came out with a brand new book called This Is How You Lose Her. And I want to tell you guys, it's a really amazing book. I can't remember the last time a book made me feel so simultaneously angry, sad, compassionate, and just excited.
Juno Diaz is joining us today from member station WGBH in Boston for a very special guest DJ. Juno, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's hear a little bit more of the TNT Boys doing Música del Alma.
Se lo traigo a Puerto Rico y se lo traigo, oye, de mi alma, música de alma.
So, Juno, I want to get right into it and start talking about your work. Felix and I had different reactions to your new book, This Is How You Lose Her. I always focus on the men, the male characters in your book, Junior, Oscar. And Felix always focuses on the women who put up with these men.
They don't seem to put up with them that much, to be honest.
So all of your books have these flawed men. In every novel, they're either men who are very hurtful or men who are very sad, Oscar Wao. And why such strong personality traits? What do you think attracts you to that?
I mean, I think part of this has to do with what my art calls for. I mean, I write in literature. That's my field. That's my art. I write stories. And I think part of what happens is that to write a real story, to write something that matters to people, you have to put in human beings. And human beings are flawed, man. Human beings are not perfect. We have a lot of spaces in our heart, and we have a lot of cracks in our souls. And I think that they've got to be able to communicate that to readers. And I think often we spend so much time in a world that asks us to be right and that asks us to be awesome and that asks us to be cute and that asks us to be like prosperous that we often forget our true natures, which is that of being flawed. I don't know. I guess my thing is that as certainly the way I grew up, I wasn't accustomed to encountering the people that I came up with in stories, in literature, in fiction. I didn't grow up that way. Yeah, I didn't grow up, even though we might say the mujeriego is kind of a stock character. I'm sorry, the last time I checked, I never read a book that had the Dominican or the Latino or the African-American style mujeriego that I grew up with. And there's a part of you that, yes, there's a part of you that does, you know, that does, people aren't always super original. People are often formulaic. But for our community that has so often lacked any representation whatsoever, even formulaic characters stand in for so much.
We're off to a good start. We're talking about culture. We're talking about language. We're talking about all kinds of stuff. But we're also talking about music. And I do want to go back to the song we started with. We asked Juno to bring in a handful of songs that he wanted to talk about or that have inspired him or otherwise are on his favorite playlist right now. We started off with the TNT Boys. Juno, tell us why you brought that song in.
Oh, man, because I kind of was picking songs that I was connecting to in the process of writing this book and songs that I just think are just dope. Tito and Tony, man. Yeah. These guys are just the best, man. I always say that they should take their album covers and make t-shirts. These things are amazing. Yeah, awesome. If you have not seen their album covers, go run to Google, take a look. And I thought part of it was when I was a kid, I remember being so appalled by their Spanish Yeah, I was like, damn. When I was a kid, I was like, man, my Spanish is way better than these guys. And then when I became an adult and my Spanish began sucking, I started having lots of sympathy for them. I'm like, oh, man, this is what I would be like if I was singing songs, man.
Oh, this is something that happens when you move to the U.S. And at first you get here and you're like, the Spanish sucks. And then a few years down the road, you're like, God damn it, how do you say that again?
Me lo dice. I'm like the poster child of messed up Spanish, man. Especially for someone like me who's an immigrant. That is like a heartbreak. It's one thing if you're like a fifth generation Tejano.
Right.
Know? But
right.
So, like, yeah. And it's just, you know, and I think it's sort of it's one of those songs that came out of that. All those uncles that I had who, you know, they were all like cool cats and they all had this music playing. And it was the soundtrack of my youth, man. Boogaloo was not unimportant. And, you know, this was one of those songs that I'd, you know, I always kind of like carried in my heart, and it spoke to that kind of that early period of my life when there was still like coolness that wasn't entirely connected to some product that they were selling on TV.
Well, you also brought one of my favorites, Bachata Duos, which is Monchi y Alejandra. And this is a very beautiful song. And I want to talk to you a little bit about melancholy and apocalypse in your work. But first, can we listen to Hoja en Blanco, or Blank Page?
Claro, thank you. That's like, for the Dominican diaspora, for the Dominican Republic, as an artist, as someone who's attempting to communicate what it means for a country to suddenly be scattered all over the world as a way to survive, and what it has done to our families, what it's done to our culture, what this has meant for our future, for our present, how children have lived it, how we've experienced it, how we've attempted to come together and to survive this and to create beauty despite this scattering. For me, the greatest piece of art to come out of this diaspora is that song. As an artist, when I think of a book, when I think of a novel, I am still trying to beat. I'm still trying to achieve. I'm trying to grasp, come close. Hoja en Blanco, man. Monchi y Alejandra, man. There's nobody like them.
The lyrics tell the story of a man who has to leave su pueblo, and then, and you know, the girl he loves just remarries. And, you know, I guess for someone who's not familiar with the immigrant experience, that might seem cheesy, but I know a lot of people who have had that experience. You know, you leave, life continues, and then you go back home one day and you're a ghost.
And the story between the two stories, you know, this is a duet, and each person has their vision of what happened. But in this song, there is this great silence, which is what really happened. You know, the guy is like claiming, yo, I like went away and came home and you left me. And the girl's like, you never wrote. And I think that part of the power of this song is that there's this enormous space in between these two, you know, these two singers, where any immigrant, anyone who has lived, yeah, that voyage, that passage through immigration, you pour your own experience into. It's really, really powerful. As a piece of art, it's tremendous. Besides that, bachata is just, you know, the shit. So I was like, damn, girl.
solos y entonaré por ti mis cantos tristes noche a noche, que lloraré sin ti cuando recuerde que estoy solo y al recordar que duermes en los brazos de otro hombre. Me pregunto si aún reflejas algo de mi vida, si en tu memoria vive aquel amor de tantos años, aquel hombre que siempre te ha querido desde niña, que llora porque el amor de su vida se ha casado.
Bachata is, for listeners who don't know, it's native of the Dominican Republic, and it has such a sense of melancholy and doom. And this last book, and really The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao, did remind me a lot of one of my favorite books, which is 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel García Márquez. And it reminded me in the sense of García Márquez starts off telling you, this will not end well. And in your work, there is like an intense sense of doom and of apocalypse, and I just want to ask you about that.
I don't know. I just myself, when I think about, you know, what it means to write, what it means to do art, but also what it means to be a person in the world, is that this is not an easy game, you guys, being alive. I think you know by now, one of the things that you discover pretty early on is that it takes a lot more guts and heart to be alive than we give it credit for. And this thing is a challenge, you know. It's not easy to be alive. It's not easy to keep faith. It's not easy to have hopes. It's not easy to keep improving yourself. It's not easy to be kind. It's not easy to keep an ethical imagination. It's not easy to be engaged. It's not easy to be anything. And throw on top of that, coming from a poor background, coming from a crazy family, going through the trials, the heartbreaks of immigration, growing up in a country as competitive and it's often as viciously anti-Latino as ours. And, you know, this is kind of a battle. And so part of me certainly resonates with that kind of melancholic, the toughness, the cortavena, you know, the lloradera of like a bachata. But part of me also knows that when you do art, whether you're making a bachata or you're making a book, you have to recognize, at least in one side, that there is plenty of laughter, but there's also plenty of tears. And you got to get them both.
Let's go ahead and listen to Omega. He's huge in the Dominican Republic and apparently in Spain, too. I didn't know that.
Come on, Omega is huge, but man, he needs to stop beating on girls, yo. I almost cut him from my playlist for that, man.
Yeah.
Like a character.
Let's go ahead and listen.
I wish he was a character.
What's this song called?
Oh my God! You don't know
Chamboneao. But I need you to explain what that means. What Chamboneao?
Oh Lord! I refuse to be the translator for this. You know what it means. Just listen to the words, and you know, sort of like somebody que alguien que te calienta. Mm. You know, that's close. But we'll talk. We'll talk.
Y que lo que contigo te quieres buscar conmigo, DJ Ricky, dale luz, los bros ya. Oh,
This is like a perfect example of like a music of nerd ignition, where somebody claims, you know, you claim to be the earliest adopter, you know?
Right.
You could see one of the disciples being like, yo, I knew Jesus when. And I think this is the, but this is the one time, I think the one time in my personal history that I was ever in on a cultural moment like early. So I was listening to Omega super early because I had made a trip to Santo Domingo before my man had blown up, before he actually was getting out of the barrios. And all the kids were listening to him. He's completely remade bachata. He became in many ways an icon for those of us who were in the diaspora, man. And for people like us, I mean, I came out of a barrio. I am from Villajuana, you know. You come from a place where you're not used to having any kind of heroes, you know, and suddenly you get this dude who's from your background, and he isn't just good. This guy is great.
From a great artist in the Dominican Republic to another great band, this time from Puerto Rico. This is Pal Norte from Calle 13.
Una pierna que respira, veneno de serpiente, por el camino del viento, voy soplando aguardiente.
El día había comenzado entusiasmado y alegre.
Dice, ¡pasaporte!
¿A dónde va por ahí, Juan Hilario, con esta noche tan fea? ¿Usted no se anima? Mire cómo está el camino, anegadito.
No, hombre, compa, el camino es lo de menos.
Lo importante es llegar.
Tengo tu antídoto.
Sin rumbo, la energía negativa yo la derrumbo con mis pezuñas de cordero. Me propuse a recorrer el continente entero sin brújula, sin tiempo, sin agenda.
Do you know, why did you bring this song in? What is it about this band that attracts you?
Well, come on, it's Calle 13, man. It's like you had to bring in something from Calle 13. I mean, damn, man. You know, you want to start a conversation amongst any Latinos, just bring up Calle 13, man. Again, I didn't grow up in a world where there were so many politically engaged artists, no matter what their contradictions. Yeah, and people who were sort of politically engaged and were doing all this kind of wild, progressive, interesting stuff. And, you know, they're just kind of charismatic and just really, really talented, man.
It reminds me of how across the board popular artists like these are, and for my generation it was like Ruben Blades going back, you know.
Oh,
it's
man,
like,
man, bro.
And you know, I'm out in California, I'm in the Chicano community, and he spoke to everyone just like these guys. I mean, every generation, every 15, 16, 17 years, some group comes along and it's just pan-Latin. It speaks to everybody, and this is one of those groups.
I think that's really nicely said. I think that there was a long gap, you know, from like, say, like the Ruben Blades to this. And I think we're finally, there's a way I feel like our community has come together in a way that I don't think there'll ever be a gap like that again.
That's an interesting point, because of the technology, because of the access to music. It's just so much more out there now. And
well, think about how my generation got subsumed in hip hop.
Right.
I mean, I'm a hip hop head. I grew up with hip hop my whole life. You know, I came up at the time when it was coming up. And you know, all of us were into hip hop in ways that was really for us just important. But think about how little we were recognized as Latino, you know, practitioners, as Latinos who were in hip hop. And I think that in some ways, you see a lot of the stuff that's happening with young people is that they're, you know, they in some ways, like, they're like, yo, I'm going to listen to reggaeton, man, because at least when I do work or when I'm a participant, my stuff is recognized, man.
Right.
And I really think that there's been a huge shift from my generation who, when you looked at our sort of high school music decks, there was nothing in Spanish. Mm-hmm. To like my goddaughters, man, who like, you know, they're young, they're like 20, 21. You look at their music and I think that they made a leap. I think that my generation thought that we had to define ourselves in contradistinction from our parents. So we sort of turned our back for a little while on salsa, merengue, and bachata.
Hecha con cariño y con esfuerzo, sea como un llamado de voluntad y esperanza para todos, 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 todos.
When I went to the Calle 13 concert, you know, the audience is so varied. You really see that pan-Latin element. And I guess I wanted to ask you, when I read a book like Oscar Wao or like This Is How You Lose Her, there's some of the stuff I'm reading, I realize that if I wasn't a native Spanish speaker, I would probably miss out on some of the references. But I'm also aware that as a non-Caribbean Hispanic, there's slang and references I'm missing out on. So when you're writing, when you're telling a story, who do you envision that you're telling it to? I mean, do you envision a person or an audience you're telling the story to? And who is that?
First of all, thank you. That's just a really thoughtful question. And listen, I mean, before I just get to that, I just wanted to say, you know, you have a lot of academics and you have a lot of politicians and you have a lot of people sitting around saying there's no such thing as a Latino identity. And then you have artists like Calle 13 and you go to their concerts and you look around and you're like, nah, that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I belong and you all belong to a moment where our community is knitting a larger identity in a really interesting and nuanced way that completely escapes the politicians and the intellectuals. Yeah, but a lot of the artists are picking up and a lot of the artists are beginning to play with. Yeah. And so when I think of like who I'm speaking to, I know for a fact that no matter who your audience is, anyone can pick up a book or anyone could pick up a song and play it and fall in love.
Hmm.
Like there's always a space in any piece of art for a completely random person that you didn't imagine to fall in love. So for example, Shakespeare, he wrote his plays. He wasn't thinking about us.
Right.
He wasn't saying like, I wonder if some Latinos in the U.S. are going to love this. And yet we could connect to him. So Shakespeare, you know, when he wrote his plays, he was really thinking of a specific audience. Yeah. Doesn't mean that people don't connect with it. And I certainly, when I write, I definitely think of a very specific audience as a strategy. I definitely think of the friends that I grew up with. Some of them are African-American. Some of them were Latino. Many of them were immigrants. Some of them were Asian. But all of us kind of grew up rough. And in my mind, I know that a reader will put up with a lot of things that they don't understand. My Asian friends who don't understand maybe Spanish, they'll put up with Spanish. My Puerto Rican friends who don't understand everything that has to do with the Dominican stuff, they'll put up with that. My Dominican friends who don't always know all my kind of nerdy crap, they'll put up with that. Readers will put up with a lot of gaps if they believe in your story and they believe in your characters.
Speaking of the process of writing or the inspiration for writing, you brought in some music from Rita Indiana, who is also a short story writer
and a recent guest DJ on. Well, not that recent. She's been a guest DJ on Alt Latino, and we love.
I know she has, man. I remember getting that.
So tell us about the song you brought in.
Oh man, El Blue de Ping Pong. First of all, I mean, just Rita is, I think, a very important figure. I think she's an incredible artist. Also, this is kind of a personal nostalgic favorite because I've known Rita a really long time. Yeah, and I think it's just one of those songs. It's just one of those songs that's banging. I mean, it's just something that, again, someone else trying to kind of reconfigure and reimagine traditional forms. And Rita's just a ton of fun, man. I don't know if you've ever seen her live.
No.
Yes.
Oh, God, man. She's a killer. I just love her, man. And I just love a lot of stuff that these young people are doing, man.
Blues de Ping Pong. Here it is.
Yeah.
The way she uses language, I think, is very similar to the merengue rhythm, the merengue beat. You know, and it sort of bounces all over the place, but it's steady and it's driving. I when I first was introduced to her music, that I saw that parallel between the rhythm of merengue and her language.
Yeah, and she's bringing an entirely different set of vocabulary, discourse. You know, there's a playfulness. It's one of those people in my community who I adore. There's nothing that she's ever done, whether it's her novels or short stories, that I don't immediately run out and just try to cop. She's just mad cool, yo. She's just mad cool. And again, someone whose politics, I never have to worry about Rita Indiana being like, deport immigrants, you know? Like, she's just fly that way, man.
Haciendo fila pa' un helado cubano, esperando esa bolita que de frente iba a caer en tu barquillita. Pon la bolita en la mesita y pícala, 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 pícala. Si tú le das, yo le doy un darundero. Tú le das, yo le doy un darundero. El blue del ping-pong, mami, un darundero. El blue del ping-pong, mami, un darundero. Si tú le das, yo le doy un darundero. Tú le das, yo le doy un darundero. El blue del ping-pong. El blue del ping-pong, pom, 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 pom.
Well, speaking of very intense love, you brought this song by Kinky. It's called Hasta Quemarnos, or Until
Yes.
We Burn.
How did you come to Kinky? How did you discover them and this music?
Oh, man. This is my, beloved, awesome ex. She grew up in the Coachella Valley. She is like a total, you know, Chicana Mexican rocker.
Right.
And she just brought an enormously, entirely different set of like just tunes to our lives, man. And this song was a song that she played nonstop while I was writing This Is How You Lose Her.
Really?
Yeah, nonstop, man. That song just, I think there is not a word that I wrote that song wasn't playing.
Usually listen to music when you're writing?
Yeah, man. I can listen to music, especially if like I've gotten to love it so much that I'm not like listening to the words.
Sure.
You know, I can't listen to anything where I still don't know all the words, you know, because then I'm like listening for the words and trying to figure it out. You know, because a lot of times when you're doing downbeat stuff, when you're doing kind of depressing, terrible things, it's good to have something like this song, something like Gigi on that kind of lifts you up, man.
There's also instrumental music, man. You don't have to have the words to listen to.
Yeah, no, I kid. I have more movie soundtracks than probably anybody outside of James Horner. You know, it's
really
scary.
Next up, you brought a band that neither Felix or I had ever heard of. Tell me about this band.
Oh, my God. You guys, listen, I'm the worst guest DJ you've ever had. My taste is like nutty and pedestrian.
No, this is great.
Well, you know, whatever. My goddaughters, I know, are sitting there in New York City being, like, appalled. But I'll tell you what. I grew up, you got to remember that I grew up at the very end of the post-revolutionary or the revolutionary period. I came to the United States in 1974. And there was a lot of politics going on. There was a lot of crazy stuff in the news. And one of the things that I got hip to very quickly was that album, Angola 1972, by Bonga. This wasn't like something that was, you know, that you'd pick up later on. It was something that was I'd heard, and it just kind of stuck to me. And Bonga was this dude who was part of the whole Angola liberation movement, the movement against Portugal, because, you know, the Portuguese were like the last to give up their empire, which is why part of the reason so many of the ex-colonies of Portugal are so screwed up. And this song, which it's in a kind of Angolan sort of Portuguese Creole. This song is extraordinary. The Child Left Behind. It's a song that just breaks your heart. And as a kid, you know, it was one of those songs that reached into me deeply. And the idea that an album would be known as Angola 1972 was so shocking to me as a kid, because, you know, that said to me politics. At that moment, that said something scary, that said something transgressive, and it also said something important. I had never imagined that someone would connect, you know, music to a political movement or a country. And it was probably the first time that I ever met that moment, that the first time that I was exposed to that. Yeah, and as someone who would later make art out of a country and out of a people, it was very important to me.
And go ahead and pronounce the title, because I'm not even going to try.
Oh, no, I can't. Brother, are you crazy? all my friends from Angola out there, you know, they'll be like, laugh at me. They're like, your Spanish is bad enough, kid. Oh, you thought I was going to spare you guys.
Oh, no. Okay,
it'll be on our website. That's npr.org/altlatino. Thanks. Zambi wangi panamona gamufalele mwanya se wando kala benyapa emengondo ya mie mwenye monamona mwenye beyaweza monamona mwenye kalunga mba monamona mwenye beyaweza monamona mwenye Gangumba, aluke nungolo fwa, gamu bingi kiaze, mwene wando kala benyaba, emengondo yamye, mona mwenye.
Yo, have you ever heard anything like that, man?
Listen to that. I mean, it strikes me that while at the same time they're fighting for independence, you know, the musical influence is there. You know, they absorb that, and then it's like there's almost a blues feeling to it, man.
And listen, as a kid, man, I grew up as an immigrant kid. I spent so much time not understanding the words for songs. You know? I spent so much time just being in a world where I couldn't understand the words. And for me, it kind of was easy to fall in love with something like this, stay in love with it. And I got to tell you, man, it's nice that something that you don't understand could just move you so deeply.
Sambi wangi panamona kamufalele mwanye se wando kala benyaba e mengondo yamye mona mwenye soyeweza mona mwenye kanga mumba mona mwenye se soyeweza mona mwenye kalunga mumba. Mona mona mwenye, soyaweza. Mona mwenye, kalunga ngumba.
You know, an ongoing debate that we have on this show is what the role of music needs to be and of artists need to be in terms of politics. I mean, are artists supposed to be political? What happens when you're living in the middle of a dictatorship or a very difficult situation? Should an artist sing about it? And there are people who say, I don't want to hear about politics in my music. I want my music to be for entertainment. Life is hard enough. What is the role of an artist?
Art is very complicated. Art is very, very contradictory. And the best thing that one can do with art is to try to have as generous an acceptance, have as open arms as possible. I mean, I try to like nonsense as much as I like to try to like political music. We often want art to pass a citizenship test or to pass a loyalty test. And whether we're the person saying, yo, I don't want anybody to cross my borders who's bringing political music, or we're the person that's saying, I don't want anybody to cross my borders who's bringing nonsense music, I think that we're often trying to put art into very specific sort of ridiculous categories. And as an artist, I know for a fact that it's very, very hard to understand the long-term effect of any art on a people, forget on an individual. And my thing is, like, I try to be as generous as possible because I know for a fact that your reaction to a piece of art can change and your aesthetic can change. And if you hold on to sort of rules too firmly, those rules end up biting you on the ass more than they help.
We're going to go to Ana Tijoux's 1977, something you brought up.
Oh, man.
There you go.
1970. Nací un día de junio del año 77, planeta Mercurio y el año de la serpiente. Signo patente tatuado y en mi frente que en el vientre de mi madre marcaba el paso siguiente. Nacer llorar sin anestesia en la camilla, mi padre solo dijo es Ana María. Sí sería el primer llanto que me probaría, que mandó las heridas y dándome la batería.
Such a powerful track, man.
Hoo-wee, yo.
We've had Ana Tijoux on the show and talked to her a lot, and all her music is inspired by her experiences as the daughter of Chilean exiles. She was born in France. Her parents were escaping the Chilean dictatorship. You had a somewhat similar experience as, you know, you're an immigrant. And do you ever wonder if you would be a writer had you stayed in the Dominican Republic?
You know, that's a question everyone asks and thinks, and for different reasons, people. You know, yours is a far more curious side. A lot of people ask it because they're American boosters. You know, they're like, could you ever have imagined of being so amazing outside of the United States? And I guess, you know, when I think of Ana Tijoux, I think of coming from the exact opposite experience and yet coming to the same place, where I was the child of supporters of a dictatorship.
Oh, wow.
My father was in, you know, the military police that was the basic arm of the Trujillato. My dad was one of these totally pro-Trujillo, right-wing, militaristic lunatics. I grew up in the sort of dictatorship of the home that's very common to, I think, many, many, many Latinos and other communities beyond. And, you know, I was one of these kids who was listening to all of this discourse and was just like, you are bugging. You know, like, I was just like, no, I'm not going to be a part of this.
How did he react to your portrayal of the, to your novel Oscar Wow, in which, you know, you portray Trujillo as the monster and a sociopath, which he was?
Yeah, you know what? I don't have any contact with my father, really, but I can tell you one anecdote that now I can talk about, but I certainly couldn't talk about a few years ago because this is public, so it's not like I'm, you know, breaking the omerta in my own life. A few years ago, I had written an editorial slamming the Dominican Republic's government's treatment of Haitians and Haitian Dominicans with my fellow writer Edwige Dantecat. And sort of, I had echoed similar views in the Dominican Republic that they had published. And get this, my father actually wrote a letter to the editor suggesting that the Dominican newspaper published, suggesting that a Dominican like me who shares these views that we should protect our citizens and protect immigrants in our country, that I should go home to Haiti. So I extrapolate what my old man must think. It's very painful to, you know, not have the kind of relationship you would want with a parent, but there it is, you know?
You know, I'm just wondering, I recently went to a reading by Dominican author Julia Alvarez, and she was very critical of Dominican treatment of Haitians and racism, not just within, I mean, that's her focus because she's Dominican, but among Hispanics in general. I mean, and I'm wondering, growing up, you know, in that environment and with a father who supported that dictatorship, what do you think enabled you to have your perspective? I mean, why didn't you follow in that ideological footstep?
For me, the question of how I came to sort of be different, I mean, it's hard to answer because one doesn't want to be, you know, all too, you know, you don't want to seem to be too self-aggrandizing and also say that it's so clear that, like, these people are evil and your decision is good. All I know that it certainly was something that I felt deeply inside of me, and I knew very early on that this stuff was nonsense, even though, of course, you know, one wants the approval of one's parents. I certainly wanted my father to love me. I wanted my father to approve of me. And, you know, I tried to be the good militaristic, lunatic, right-wing son that I think he would have approved of. But that wasn't going to come out. That wasn't my bag, yo. I was interested in art. I was always very sensitive. You know, I kind of never wanted to hurt people. And I think that if you're, like, kind of a right-wing dictatorial lunatic, part of your whole bag is that you think that some people deserve really to be hurt. And there was a part of me that just was no good at that. I just was no good at it, yo. Just no good.
A wide-ranging conversation we had today. All over the place. Juno Diaz, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, you know, hopefully it was of use to someone. Thank you so much for this opportunity,
this was
you guys.
A lot of fun. What do you want to, what song do you want to go out on?
Well, what do we got left, you guys? I'm like, I
W-U-T.
What?
Oh, this is a kid who my goddaughters know. Leaf, yo. This is this young guy, amazing. He's like a Wesleyan person, a West person. My girls put me on to him. I think he's stupendous. I don't know what you guys think.
I loved it,
really,
yeah.
Love him. Really, really amazing. This kid's got it.
What's the name of the song?
What?
W-U-T, man.
Like what, Felix?
And the name of the artist?
Leaf.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. I think his real name is Khalif, but, you know, it goes by Leaf. Kid is remarkable. And my goddaughter is, like, actually, anyway, she's, like, one of the girls in the video. And all the people who
made it
are, like, I'm not going to say. All the people who made it are, like, Wesleyan people.
Awesome. I'm pulling like Coco, walla, 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 walla.
I want to remind our listeners that you can hear all the songs that we played on today's show on our website. That's npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to check us out 24/7 on Alt Latino Radio at npr.org/music.
You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter.
Again, thank you very much to Juno Diaz for dropping by this afternoon.
I'm Jasmine Garth.
And I'm Felix Contreras.
And Juno, next time you're in D.C., let's take you to Los Hermanos. That's on Park and 14th.
Thank you guys so much.
Juno, muchas gracias.
And jumping on a mango, whiskey in my cup, posing like I'm in a manga. I'm a black candle, my number two pencil. Fresh my gun like pencils, let me be your mentor. Aries, Leo rising, nasty with the time. I see a goonie vibing, I be like, hi man. Native to the island, fantasies realizing. I see a hater hating, I be like, God, I am.
What it is, what is
love,
what is
fine,
what it do, what it is, 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 what it is,